Well, the board of Australia's biggest greenhouse gas emitter, AGL, is set to be overhauled, with shareholders backing faster action on tackling climate change. Billionaire Mike Cannon-Brooks's Grok Ventures became the biggest AGL shareholder back in May, with the plan to speed up the 185-year-old company's transition from coal to renewables. And at the power giant's investors meeting today, shareholders backed Mr. Cannon-Brooks' four board nominees. That includes former Energy Security Board Chair Carrie Schott and others. Tim Buckley is the director of independent think tank Climate Energy Finance and the author of a recent report called One AGL from Laggard to Leader. He joins us in the News Radio studios. Tim, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Glenn.
Greenpeace Australia says this could mark a watershed moment for Australia's biggest climate polluter. Is it that significant?
I think it is. AGL is by far Australia's largest emitter. We've seen AGL shareholders suffer a collective loss of $10 billion. That's a huge amount of capital that's been flushed down the toilet by the board, the previous board, that refused to accept and act on the climate science. So I think today is a watershed moment for Australia. It's also a watershed moment for impact capital and for companies changing their direction. So we've talked a lot in the past about engagement with boards. We've talked about divestment with boards, but neither are perfect tools. So now we have a third option, which is actually impact investing and shareholders redirecting the board to make sure the board is aligned with the shareholders' needs.
And it is a bit of a turnaround, isn't it? Because those Cannon-Brooks board nominees were rejected by AGL initially. Were they needed to be dragged kicking and screaming to this?
Yes, it's Patricia McKenzie's the self-appointed chair of AGL, I think, had a reminder. She's there to represent all shareholders. She must work in the fiduciary interests of all shareholders. And when you're the biggest climate polluter in Australia, you actually have a fiduciary duty, a social obligation, a financial implication of not actually addressing the elephant in the room, the science. So at the end of the day, while Mike Cannon-Brooks might have put four of the candidates forward in terms of paperwork, they're there to represent all shareholders. And the vote was by all shareholders to unanimously, or not overwhelmingly, endorse their appointment to represent all shareholders and actually reform AGL and turn it from a laggard to a leader, as you kindly mentioned.
Indeed. Well, let's look at exactly what that reform would involve. The inclusion of the Cannon-Brooks backers adds pressure on AGL to further accelerate the closure of its coal-fired power stations and make that transition to renewable energy sources. What will that mean in real terms? Where may we see some action and when?
Well, the shareholders voted for the new AGL Climate Action Plan. So that brings forward the closure of Loy Yang A by a decade to 2035. And so at the end of the day, AGL's just effectively voted. The board is now in place to accelerate the rapid decarbonisation of, as I said, the biggest polluter in Australia, meaning by 2035 at the latest, it will be 100% invested in the solution. Well, almost. There's still some gas in there, but a very small part. So we now need to see AGL unlock tens of billions of dollars of new investment in firmed renewables and modernisation strategies, electrification of everything, embrace all of the opportunities that people like Professor Saul Griffiths has been talking about for the last year, about the massive opportunity, electrify everything, decarbonise it, and that will dramatically lower the cost of energy for everyone in Australia. So I think it's a win for Australia as well as Mike Cannon-Brooks.
So a move on Loy Yang A, that energy plant, and the Bayswater coal burning power station as well, perhaps. All right, let's see how fast they move on those in the end. This shift, as you say, is said to be industry-wide, and it's all about keeping the balance. Some critics will say, listen, you've got to watch how fast you do this because you've got to make sure we can keep the lights on. What do you say to those who say, listen, just don't go so fast?
Yeah, at the end of the day, we need grid reliability. We need to service all of the consumers of Australia, industry and retail. But yeah, the naysayers are the problem, have been the problem for Australia. We've actually had a dearth of investment. We've had the government squeezing out private investment in solutions, and that's why we're in the energy policy chaos we're in today, the energy crisis. So we need to unlock massive investment. But it is also actually an endorsement of Anthony Albanese government. We've also seen the Brookfield takeover of Origin Energy announced in the last couple of weeks, they've offered to not only spend $18 billion buying Origin Energy, but to crowd in another $20 billion of investment.
And that's crucial, isn't it? Because Origin kind of lacked that sort of cash to go where they needed to go.
Absolutely. So that's one of the biggest investors in the world, giving Australia a huge tick for doing the right thing in terms of having the right policy framework to crowd in massive, massive tens of billions of dollars of investment. That new generation will drive permanently down the price of electricity for everyone. So I'm actually pretty excited. AGL, Origin, Brookfield coming in, crowding in capital. We need investment. We need to seize the opportunity rather than be threatened by the risks. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for Australia to be a renewable energy and critical minerals superpower. AGL is going to play a key role.
Shareholder activist groups seem to agree. They've been declaring victory and saying the boards of other high-emitting stock exchange-listed companies should take note. Are we likely to see similar moves elsewhere, and if so, where?
Yeah, it's a reminder to the gas industry, the methane gas industry, often misnomer called the natural gas industry. It is methane gas. 25% of the world's carbon emissions come from methane. We are the largest exporter of LNG in the world. It's a reminder that the world is carbon constrained. The world has a climate emergency. We need to act on it. We can't pretend that it's not going to happen. It's happening really fast. So I'd say this is a major shot across the bow for players like Woodside and Santos, for example, to remind them that investors have committed to 1.5 degrees. We've got the Glasgow Finance Alliance for net zero emissions pledging $150 trillion of capital, pledging to align on a 1.5 degree trajectory. Woodside and Santos are nowhere near that. The board should be reevaluating very rapidly their position, because at the moment they're Luddites.
Money talks. Let's see where the investment money might go next. It certainly does seem to have an effect when it comes to the crunch. Tim, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Glenn.
Tim Buckley, Director of the independent think tank Climate Energy Finance, joining us in the studio there. Well, today is the day the world's population hits 8 billion. But the numbers in Australia are a little different. Overseas migration is down, slowing population growth, while the average number of children we're having is also falling. Angelique Liu spoke to some Australians to find out why that is.
Sydney, where the cost of housing is just unattainable and wages aren't going up and you're trying to hustle and juggle to make it all work, don't see why people would have more than one or two.
Time and money is probably the biggest issue with raising four kids.
Yeah, I have always known that I haven't wanted kids.
When you say you have one, the question that comes up is why?
Why are Aussies having fewer kids?
The total fertility rate is the average number of children born to a woman. It hit a record low of 1.59 kids in 2020. And it's rebounded slightly to 1.7 last year. But that's still not enough for replacement. The number needed to exactly replace the population without immigration, which is about 2.1, and it's been this way since the 70s. The data also shows the median age of mothers is growing, from about 25 in the early 70s and hitting a record high of 31.7 last year.
I was 39, so definitely...